His radio talk thanks the McCravey, Newland, Sturkey, and Clarity Law Firm at McCraveyLaw.com for sponsoring this hour of Christian Worldview with Tony and Austin.
You're listening to Christian Worldview with Tony and Austin. Our number is 888-660-9535. And here are your hosts, Austin Barker and Dr. Tony Beam.
Welcome back. It's hour number two of Christian Worldview with Tony and Austin. Thanks for joining us today. This is Tony Beam. I'm the Senior Director of Church and Community Engagement for the Tim Brazier Campus of North Greenville University. I also serve as the Director of Public Affairs for the university, along with my colleague, Lisa Van Riper, and I'm the Director of South Carolina Baptist Office of Public Policy. And, of course, North Greenville is where we are equipping transformational leaders for the church and society. My co-host is Austin Barker.
Good morning, Dr.
And thank you, Bill. We have a special guest on the program this morning. Senator Josh Kimbrell is joining us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good to talk to you, Doctor. Happy New Year. I know we've talked privately, but not here on the radio since then, so happy 2022.
That's right. This past week was our first the return of Drew McKissick, and today we have the return of Senator Josh Kimbrell. Before we get into state politics, and we got a lot to talk about there, I want to ask you for your response to the Supreme Court's decision yesterday on the vaccine mandate, and also the fact that Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin said not no, but heck no, to any change to the filibuster.
Well, let's take that second part first. That is the best news I've gotten in a while, is that Sinema and Manchin decided not to allow for the total dismantling of the American Republic, so thank God for that. It's sad, though, that we're down to two senators as the only is the linchpin between whether we destroy the country or not. This is a radical administration that believes that states are appendages of the federal government, not the federal government creation of the states. And we've got to reverse that balance if we're going to preserve freedom. But I'm thankful that they took that stand and hope they stand firm until we can win the House and Senate back in November. As of the Supreme Court, I mean, look, this is certainly positive. That this is a huge blow to the administration's aspirations to control the decisions of every business in the country. A little disappointed they didn't go stronger on the health care mandate, though. So it's very confusing to say that we're going to exempt pretty much every employer. But, hey, by the way, health care companies can do this kind of thing, which underscores the reason why we were working so hard to repeal Certificate of Need this week to try to provide some diversity of thought in the health care field. But overall, a good day in Washington yesterday.
It was. So is it a good day in South Carolina? What about the South Carolina legislature? Got cranked up this past week, and there's already been some subcommittee hearings, one consequential that you're involved in because it has to do with the Medical Rights of Conscience Act.
Well, it's too early to tell if it's a good day in the South Carolina legislature. It's always a great day in South Carolina. Too early to tell if it's a great day in the legislature. Look, I've got a lot of things I want to see happen this year. I'm going to fight for those aggressively, and I need your audience to stay engaged because there's a couple of big things. Let's take that one first. You mentioned a couple of big things we need to work on, but we'll start with medical freedom. In light of what's happened in the last year, and not only the vaccine mandates or doctors not being allowed to try new things when it comes to the treatment of COVID, i.e. ivermectin or monoclonal antibodies, et cetera. But even down to the notion that the city of Columbia decided that if you don't agree with the concept of multiple genders beyond male and female, that you could be fined by the city, is stunning. It is a stunning act of tyranny. And we're watching across our country this chipping away at conscience rights. And one of the fundamental tenets of Americanism is the idea that you get to live according to your conscience and the dictates of your faith. And if we don't defend that, there's not a lot to defend. And so I am working very hard to ensure we get medical right of conscience expansions here when you're never forced, particularly as a psychologist or doctor or physician, to violate your faith to work. And because we've seen this for years, Tony, we've seen it in the healthcare, education was taken over by the left decades ago. We're making progress now towards school choice, but for decades, leftism dominated the thought process and educational establishment. Now they're doing the same thing with healthcare, because if you can control healthcare, you can control what is the definition of science in their mind, and this is how you push an agenda. And so I'm pushing back. Unfortunately, the Democrats in our state are determined to try to block this bill, so I'm going to have to get very creative on how we go about expanding these conscience rights. But and we need to work on some Republicans, for that matter, to make sure that my own colleagues move forward with this. But we are determined to ensure that you're not going to be penalized if you don't believe in the woke idea of 36 genders, or if you dare believe in trying something different from a treatment standpoint, particularly if it's informed by your faith.
Exactly. Well, what about tax policy, Senator? I know that that's something that you have you put forth a really comprehensive tax revision for the state, kind of an overhaul. And what I'm hearing now is that it looks like what we're likely going to get is a tax cut, but nobody seems to have the appetite for the full overhaul.
Well, it depends on who you ask. Here's the problem we've got. We've got a lot of people who love to get sound bites. They'll go to the well in the House or the Senate. They'll give real good speech talking about, oh, the tax burden's too high, and then they'll find a way to do exactly nothing. If I hear one more person suggest a study committee, I think I'm going to just vomit, because we've been talking about this for about 10 years. We've had a Republican majority in the Senate, a functional Republican majority, for the last 8 years, roughly. We have a supermajority in the Senate now, and we're still talking about studying the issue. So there's two different extremes on this, and that's why I proposed what I did, which I can circle back to in a second. For starters, you've got some people who just want to do what the governor suggests, which is $177 million cut. That's worthless. Okay, but all due respect to the governor, $177 million out of a $2 billion surplus is like firing a BB gun at a freight train. It's tantamount to meaningless. Then you've got on the other side folks who say, well, if we can't do everything at one time, we ought not do it. In other words, they want to tackle property taxes and Act 388 and deal with income taxes and sales taxes. Well, there's a thing as being too ambitious. And when you go swinging for the fences like that, the usual result is nothing happens.
Yeah.
What I have proposed is let's eliminate all business taxes to zero, cut the personal from 7 to 3.5. Now, I know that seems like a big cut, but here's the reality. Right now, the effective rate for the average South Carolina citizen is 3.5% once you take it into account all of the deductions and mortgage interest deductions and all that. What I'm saying is, let's just make it easier where everybody pays a flat tax of 3.5%. We don't make it convoluted to file your state tax return. We eliminate all of the corporate taxes and LLCs and small businesses. We can create jobs. And then the way we pay for this is to just cut the loopholes on the sales tax. We don't even have to raise the rate. We just have to take away all the loopholes and exemptions that special interests have done for decades. I'm going to insist on my plan. Look, if there's something else that comes to the floor that's got some teeth and is a good idea, I'm always willing to consider it. I'm not so wed to the pride of authorship that I'm not willing to look at somebody else's plan. But here's the reality. Right now, the only plan on the floor of the Senate of South Carolina is mine. There's a blank bill that was filed by a colleague. It's literally blank. Saying, well, let's just write it as we go. I'm sorry to say, with all respect to my colleague, that never happened. And then everything else is just a floor speech. So right now, the only actual proposal is one I propose, and I'd like it to be taken up. If it isn't, then somebody else needs to give us an alternative. But we got to do something, because if we waste another year on cut taxes while North Carolina slashes their rates, we're going to hear a large sucking sound, and that will be jobs, investment, capital going to the Tar Heel State.
And North Carolina is proposing cutting taxes by hundreds of billions of dollars. North Carolina and Georgia are already eating our lunch when it comes to a competition for businesses to locate because of the tax environment that's very favorable in both of those states. So South Carolina has so much to offer. There's no reason that we shouldn't be one of the leading states or the leading state on the eastern seaboard for business development. But it's going to take the courage to take a look at our tax code, the way we treat businesses, and make sure that we're a leader in that area.
Well, that's right, Tony. And here's the reality. What we need to do, and this is where we need to put pressure, and I mean respectfully. Look, I'm been honored to be a member of the Senate, and I have some wonderful colleagues. I'm really proud of Harvey Peeler. He's my Spartanburg County delegation mate. He's now the Senate Finance Committee chairman. Probably the most conservative Senate Finance Committee chairman in literally decades.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's a great guy. We've got a lot of good people doing good things. We just need to coalesce behind an agenda, and this is that agenda. Cut taxes, reduce red tape and regulation. And while you're doing these things to improve the business climate, stand up for religious liberty, stand up for social conservative principles, so that people come to South Carolina not just because the weather's usually nice, not just because the taxes might be favorable, but because we're a state that believes in faith and family and free enterprise all at the same time. I want to be a state that is hospitable to business, but is equally hospitable to family and people of faith and churches and charities. And I am darn determined to do both.
Senator Kimbrell, thank you so much for joining us today. Senator Josh Kimbrell from Spartanburg. We look forward to our visit with you next Friday.
Always a pleasure. Enjoy Sonomageddon this weekend.
Yeah, thanks a lot. You too. Be safe.
You're listening to His Radio Talk, and this is Christian Worldview with Tony and Austin. Our number is 888-660-9535, and here are your hosts, Austin Barker and Dr. Tony Bean.
Okay, I promised you we had two guests today. We had Senator Kimbrell on the phone here a few minutes ago. Sheila Miller's already here in the studio. She's going to be talking about a fascinating book here at 8:30. So those of you seeing her on Facebook Live, we're going to talk to her at 8:30. But before we do, I want to talk about this story from Daily Signal. And there's some other news outlets that have this story, but not a lot. And it is incredibly significant to me that the Biden administration has decided that some little-known government-affiliated agency that's supposed to have the job of simply monitoring people who are awaiting trial. I mean, it's an agency called the Pretrial Services Agency for the District of Columbia. Okay, how vanilla can you get? And how that the name should suggest a kind of what this group is supposed to be doing. So it's a federal independent entity that assists officers in the District of Columbia courts in formulating release recommendations and providing supervision services to defendants awaiting trial. There it is. That's according to the Daily Signal.
Kind of a niche market.
Yeah, for real. Like, this is what we do, and this is... But then now they're doing something else. They're maintaining records on who has a religious exemption from the vaccine mandate. And that raises an incredible amount of questions. In me, it raises a sense of outrage. What business is it of the government? These companies make decisions about religious exemptions based on circumstances. I mean, everybody, some companies, like you put down, I want to be exempted from the mandate, which doesn't exist now, by the way. But I want to be exempted from this mandate for religious reasons. And some companies say, okay. Some companies say, no, you've got to demonstrate that you've got a legitimate religious objection. What is that objection? What are the grounds? Do you have a history? So there's a whole spectrum of the way businesses respond to this, depending on how they view religious liberty, quite frankly. For some businesses, it's, well, that's private, that's up to you. Some businesses are like, no, you can't hide behind it if you don't have a history. But this is incredible. This little agency, the Pretrial Services Agency for the District of Columbia, announced a new record system that will store the names and personal religious information of all employees who make religious accommodation requests for an exemption to the vaccine mandate. Why? They didn't even put a rationale out. They didn't bother to say, okay, this is why we're doing this. And it doesn't give me any comfort that this is some small, little, insignificant agency. In fact, that makes it worse, because this allows them to operate way under the radar. Now, I'm not suggesting that there's some grand conspiracy here. I don't know, but I'm suggesting that this is pretty dang odd that they care who objected for religious reasons, and second of all, that they would keep a – for what purpose? What are they going to do with the list? Does that get turned over to the Biden administration? Does the Justice Department, as they begin this domestic terrorist investigative unit – out of the Justice Department? Do they begin with people who then they say, well, here's some characteristics of the domestic crazies that we think could be terrorists? First of all, they religiously disapprove of the vaccine mandate. I mean, I'm speculating, okay? That's pure spitballing. I confess that. But I'm trying to figure out, why does the government care who does that? This is personal. It's my religious belief. And the only people that need to know that is me and the employer who said to me, yes, you can be exempted because of religious grounds.
I see your odd and raise you one ominous.
Okay. Give me your ominous.
Well, I mean, I said at the beginning that it still can, and you kind of dismissed me and said that employers have every
did
right to
you?
Ask. Well, I mean, yes, you did. You said that employers have every right to have you describe in detail the nature of your religious commitments that are impelling you to object to the vaccine. And then they're going to go put that in your HR file, and they're going to have your religious commitments on file.
Well,
now that's, you said the employer has the right to do that, and I agree with you that they have the right, but I told you I see your odd and raise you one ominous. Is it any surprise to you then that the government has the same impulse to harvest and then file those religious commitments?
I think there's a huge difference between an employer who gets that information in order to satisfy an HR question and the government having that information for some reason that they refuse to talk about.
I agree that there's
a
difference, but
difference.
To me it's a difference of scale, not necessarily of kind. It's a 0.5 to 0.8. It's not like we're dealing with a gazelle over here and an octopus over here.
No. We're talking about apples and oranges,
okay.
Not gazelles and octopus. This is, look, an employer, I don't, and I know people that are, they get mad at me when they say this, and go ahead, get mad. But you know, there are people that use their religion, their religious commitment.
Uh-huh.
As
misuse.
They misuse it.
Right.
And that
I agree with that.
That shouldn't be.
I have several of those people in my church.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. They don't really have a religious exemption. They just go, okay,
they're
there's
just
my
uncomfortable
door.
With
there's
it. They're uneasy with it. It's the only exemption they have access to.
That minimizes the importance of
really
personal
does.
Faith.
It does.
And so I don't want that to happen either.
Right.
But neither do I. I'll go this far. I don't think an employer should retain the reason. I think a reason should be offered, but the employer doesn't need to know, have in the record why, or at least maybe nothing more than a general description of why. Mm-hmm. They just have a category that says this, if they want to do it, this objection is justified.
I would be okay with that.
And not list a whole bunch of reasons as to why, because that does get into a person's personal belief, which
and
is
that's off limits from an employment perspective. You can't ask someone about their faith commitments.
Well, you can ask them, but you can't use it as a factor of employment. You can't tell somebody you can't work here because you're a Buddhist, or you can't work here, but unless you're a religious organization that is, or a nonprofit
that's
Christian
that
oriented,
is one
and
of
that
the,
that's
yeah,
right. You've got to be Christian to be in a Christian organization,
right?
But in a business. You can't tell somebody they can't work there because of their faith. It's against the law.
You can't even ask them about it in an interview.
That's right. You can't. But as it relates to employment and rules within the company, once they're employed, then I think the employer can ask that question. I think it has to be navigated carefully. But I just don't. I really have an aversion, and I don't know why. This is me.
Well, I do know why, because they're not giving you any rationale, and that's because there is no rationale. There's no justifiable reason why the government would want to harvest and then store that information.
Agree. I think people should be very concerned about this. Obviously, the Biden administration never intended to keep this big promise of we're going to be the most transparent administration because there's no transparency. There's no transparency when it comes to deciding that they're going to engage the National School Board Association in a plot to undermine and to justify turning parents who have a disagreement on policy into domestic terrorists. I mean, we know that the Secretary of Education was involved in that. And can I just say this? The Secretary of Education is a cabinet-level position. He doesn't go out and do things without the president somehow knowing about it. The Biden administration knew this. The Justice Department, I guarantee you, well, I won't guarantee you because I don't know for sure, but I highly suspect that Merrick Garland, and what's the guy's name, the Secretary of Education? Becerra? Is that his name?
No, that's HHS.
Oh, that's HHS, yeah. I can't remember.
Anyway, him.
I think they were, there was a discussion, at least among aides, about this, that, okay, this is something the Justice Department wants to do. We need some way to justify it. So I just, when you look at how this whole thing went down, it's hard not to think that that's the case. I can't see that.
But Miguel Cardona.
Cardona. I got very frustrated this morning, side note, because I need some contact solution. I usually keep it in my bag.
Oh.
And I put my contacts in the wrong eye this morning.
Oh, no.
I mean, you've got one that goes in the left eye and one that goes in the right eye. And what they do, they have to do in that eye. And when you flip them, like, I'm looking at you, but you're not clear. It's fuzzy because my vision's affected. I went to Walmart. I went to CVS.
And they didn't have it.
Walgreens. No, they're not open.
Oh, gotcha. At that early.
But, you know, they used to be. I used to come down here, and if I had to do something before I did the show, I went to Walmart. It's right down here on the left.
Right.
They were open like 24/7. Mm-hmm. Now they got these big cans in front of the door. And what's really frustrating is there's people sitting in there. They're sitting in there with their Walmart little garb on, you know.
Did they stick their tongue out at you?
No, but they looked at me, you know. And I'm like, and they were like, you know, doing this on their watch. And I'm like, okay, let me get my hand on my knot. No, I'm kidding. But it just makes me aggravated. I was kidding.
No, but the fact that that thought even occurred to you, it just tells you something. You must be one of those Republican people who just likes to...
Yeah, I'm a radio terrorist. That's what I am. I'm going to take over Rush Limbaugh's title. I'm just going to be a warm, lovable little fuzzball. Okay, because he's obviously not using that anymore, so I might take it.
You're listening to His Radio Talk, and this is Christian Worldview with Tony and Austin. Our number is 888-660-9535, and here are your hosts, Austin Barker and Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for listening to the program today. Sheila Miller is in the studio. Do you have, she's been a pro-life advocate for 3 years, been married to Robert for 28 years. Congratulations. She has two teenage children, Bryson and Sydney, and two dogs named Toby and Kevin. We had a Toby. Toby was a beagle, and our second beagle to go to doggy heaven under the wheels of my wife's car. In 2013, our listeners, they've heard this story. In 2013, she self-published Memoirs of a Miracle Baby, A Testimony of God's Love, which a little bit of that testimony is in this book.
Yes.
Not a lot, but because I did read that far. I've been confessing that I haven't finished the book.
Only about halfway through the book.
I also blame Disney Plus for putting the Book of Boba Fett on during Christmas. So, anyway, it's a Testimony of God's Love, available in both softbound and Kindle versions on Amazon. Let me say this. I've read enough of this book to know that Sheila is an excellent writer. She captures in her writing the essence of and the emotion behind the events that she's describing. It's very good. So I would recommend it to you. So tell us about the book. It's called Connection at the Fence. Okay. Just give us an overview.
All right. Well, first of all, good morning. Thank you for having me here. I appreciate it.
We're glad to have you.
So this book is a pro-life book. And it is about the amazing story of me meeting and befriending an abortion worker here in Greenville, South Carolina.
Yeah.
It took a period of time because I've been over 3 years, 3.5 years, being a sidewalk counselor outside the abortion facility. And I basically just wanted to reach out in love to all the women going in and all the workers going in. And I eventually got in contact with this one worker, was able to text her occasionally and give her gifts. And in doing that, we ended up becoming friends. It's an amazing story. And that's not what the whole thing, you know, that the book is about. It's
it covers
the topic of abortion quite a lot to educate people, to know what's happening.
And it also goes into your background and her background which are very different, which makes the friendship even more amazing that God would put the two of you together. Now, I want to know, because, you know, here I am, haven't finished the book, so I don't know the end of the story. Is there been a mindset change here, or is this just an ongoing relationship where you're telling her about why life is precious and she's responding how?
Well, going into this, I knew that she was pro-choice, obviously, because she works
at an abortion clinic.
She works at an abortion clinic. So God really put on my heart that it was time to write a book again and that she was to be my co-author, and it really, really shocked me.
Yeah, I bet.
I mean, it really did. I couldn't believe it. And then I couldn't believe it when she said yes. Okay, that that shocked me tremendously. But the writing part, you know, it was about 5 months to just get the bulk of it written. And I had all these different sections of the book in mind. It's a bunch of different types of, it's like several books in one, somebody said to me once. And the one part that we put off to the end was the interview where I was going to interview her. And so we have a dialogue going back and forth where I ask her hard questions like, how can you say you're a Christian and work in an abortion clinic?
Because she does, let's establish that. She has a Christian witness testimony. She does claim Christianity.
Yes, right. Yes. So in going through this interview with her, I was actually shocked out of my mind, which I think you can see when you read the book, that she actually said in all the tens of thousands, she's worked her 18 years, in all the tens of thousands of abortions that she has seen happen, she's never felt that one was justified. And I was speechless, like you are right now. I was like, what?
So how do you participate in something that's completely unjustifiable, particularly when you're talking about the taking of a human life?
Exactly.
Does she believe that it's life?
She does. And it's not all that cut and dried, though, because as you see from the book, if you read it, I mean, to me or you maybe, it's more cut and dried, but to her, her mother worked there. She grew up, one, with abortion being legal, two, with her mother working in the abortion facility, and now she's been there 18 years, going on 19, and it's her livelihood. So it's a complicated issue for her, and it is... she says she's sort of flip-floppy about it, but it is a job. Now, however, the very last page, I think, is the most exciting one in the book, where she does say that she's ready for a change, actively looking for other work, and anxious to see where God will take her in her life.
But, you know, I pray this for her, that because I don't hear any repentance in any of that. And I think there has to be, I don't know. I guess it is somewhat my place to raise that question, because if a person begins to be uncomfortable about something and maybe it's time to do something else, particularly something like this that is diametrically opposed to Scripture, I think if you're a believer, to be forgiven and to be restored after participating in something that clearly is not the will of God, there has to be a moment of repentance. You can't just say, okay, I'm done with this, and put it behind me.
Yes, and that is, it's between her and God.
It is, that's
meanwhile,
right.
I am fostering a relationship of love and leading her to God. So the two main points of the book are that, one, it's very pro-life, and that there is just never a better, that abortion is never the best solution.
Right,
for
never.
A woman in crisis, never. No
never
exceptions.
For the woman, not for the woman, certainly not for the baby.
Definitely.
But not
and
for the woman.
The other is that we can have, pro-lifers can have the best results with loving, non-judgmental attitudes towards the women and the abortion workers.
Now, I want to go ahead and take the break a little bit early, because I want us to key on that when we come back. Talk about, you know, that's not the world we live in. That's not the culture we're in. It's not the way Christians are behaving. On the whole. So I want to talk about why you have decided that that's the way that we need to live. I happen to agree with it, and it puts me kind of in a weird place sometimes doing talk radio. So we'll be back in 3 minutes. Stay with us.
You're listening to His Radio Talk, and this is Christian Worldview with Tony and Austin. Our number is 888-660-9535, and here are your hosts, Austin Barker and Dr. Tony Bean.
Sheila Miller is our guest. She is an author who has written a book called Connection at the Vent. She has another book, too. The title of that book is Memoirs of a Miracle Baby, A Testimony of God's Love. So
I think the big surprise of the book, I mean, just the whole premise of the thing is just that a person who is a pro-life sidewalk counselor can be friends with a person who's working in an abortion clinic.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the tension that's in the title. Can you talk about, because that doesn't happen in this world. We live in a polarized climate where we scream at each other over fences. We don't reach over fences.
Right.
What's
going on? Particularly Christians. And, I mean, Christians have gotten caught up in the political acrimony that is of the culture. But that's not of God's word. It's not the way that we're called as believers to respond. This is the way that we're called.
Sheila, what is the seed that got dropped in the soil of your heart that has bloomed into friendship? I mean, what created the possibility of you being friends? Is that just, are you just a peacemaker by disposition, or is there something else that's going on behind the scenes?
It was God behind the scenes, because the texting went on for, about a year, just a little bit. I tried not to push too much, but just enough. I just wanted to reach out in love, and I wanted to try to make a connection.
How did you get her number?
Obviously, her son.
Okay.
But obviously, she would know that I wouldn't want her to work there. That was obvious.
Okay.
But I felt this desire. I felt God just laid it on my heart to invite her away from the clinic to go meet for a milkshake after work one day. And thinking about it, that's not from me. Like, that is so far out there. And then she said yes when I asked her. And I was so surprised. And so we met, and she's like, why did you want to meet with me? I said, I don't know. God just laid it on my heart to invite you out. And what happened was we got to talking, and a couple hours had passed like that. It was amazing. And then we did it again 2 or 3 weeks later, and we kept meeting. And we didn't know why we were meeting. I didn't know why. But we realized we had a lot to talk about. And at first we just kept it. I said, hey, let's just keep it real simple. We won't talk about any difficult topics. We'll just talk about kids and pets, And we did. For 2 hours, we talked about kids and pets that first time.
Right.
But that opened the door to more, difficult topics. And again, it was 2020. We had nothing else to do. So we could spend hours at a time chatting at the Wendy's or the Hardee's or McDonald's or whatever. Mm-hmm. And one time up to, 7 hours chatting because we had the time. So that helped. And then we're like, wow, we actually have become friends. And it was a beautiful thing. It was nice.
Do you think your conversations with her have had an impact on her?
Yes, I do. I don't know to the extent.
Right.
But for her to say that she is willing to leave and look for another job, yes, because before she wasn't.
Before, yes.
At the beginning of the book, she wasn't, but at the end of the book, she was.
So let me ask the other question. Has her conversation with you had an impact on you? If she wrote the book, what would that book sound like?
Well, she did write part of it.
I realize that.
It helped show me that there are people, like I would stereotype and say all abortion workers have abortions and have had abortions and think people should have abortions. She does not. She does not want anyone in her family to. She has not. And she, if someone asks her her opinion, she will say, I wouldn't do it. So no, she says, I can't tell you what you should do. It's your body. It's your choice.
That's amazing to me, because your body, your choice, the thinking doesn't extend to the body of the baby.
And that's what it sounds like to me. It sounds like she's just never done the hard work of thinking deeply about the abortion issue. It's not that she's committed wholesale to the thing because she views it as problematic. It seems that she does. But she's just never done the hard work of actually digging into it. This is just a job. This is the way I was raised. That my mom worked here. It's always been like this.
See, I'm like you. I would think that an abortion worker, particularly, somebody who it's their job every day to go into an abortion clinic and somehow participate in the death of babies in the womb, that they have had to either decide that that baby is not a baby, it's a clump of tissue, and so I'm not really having anything to do. It's all about a woman's body.
There's nothing done wrong here.
Mm-hmm. I would think they would have to think that way. Mm-hmm. Or they would have to have crossed the line where they don't necessarily think that that's true, but they don't care. You know, the woman's life is more valuable and her future is more valuable than the potential of the life that's in the womb. It has not occurred to me that there would be people in that environment that don't agree with it, and it's a job for them. I can't fathom doing that.
Right.
In myself.
But. And that's the difference between her and me.
And exactly.
We understand that we agree to disagree, and we do it amicably. Which we don't see a lot in this society.
That's a white elephant or a unicorn or whatever in today's. So at the end of the last segment, you mentioned this. It was something like this phrase: loving, non-judgmental attitude toward. And I'm saying that was toward abortion-minded women or toward women that have had an abortion.
Yes, to all of them, because sometimes women often don't stop on the way in. Sometimes those same women will stop on the way out and want to know, like, what does this person have to say to me? So I have something to say to everybody in love, if they're going in, if they're having the abortion, if they've already had the abortion, if they're going in and see, I want to be the person there that says, you don't have to do this. You can make a better choice. Because I have a friend that said, Sheila, there was nobody standing outside that clinic when I went in. And if you would have been there, if I would have had one person telling me not to do it, I wouldn't have done it. But all my friends just supported me and said, you know, whatever your choice will support you. But she said, if you had been there, Sheila, I wouldn't have gone through with it. And that broke my heart.
I bet.
And so I just want to be there. Even if people don't stop, they can't say I wasn't out there. You know, I was out there to help them.
Now, it's interesting. That's what you say when they're coming in.
Yes.
What do you say when they stop and they're coming out?
Right. When they come out, well, a couple things. One, if they took the abortion pill, I let them know there is the possibility for reversal. Yes, mm-hmm. Abortion pill reversal. But also, if they also come back after 2 or 3 weeks for their checkup. So if they've left, they've already had the abortion, then I guide them to healing because there is postabortive healing. And in your audience listening, 1 in 4 have had abortions, and they need to know that there is help out there. And I had an acquaintance, I'll call her, who surprised me. She said, I read your book. I said, oh, really? And she said, yes, I read your book, and you're very non-judgmental, and you're very passionate about this. And she wanted to know why I was so passionate about the whole topic and wanted to understand about me being non-judgmental about it. And I said, yeah, I mean, everybody sinned, okay? Everybody sinned. I don't know that I would have done this particular sin, but I've sinned, okay? So she opened up and told me that she had had an abortion many, many years ago. And so I guided her towards the healing. And she's in that healing, and she's so happy about it. Mm-hmm. And she's kept this secret for 30, 40 years. So,
you know, there was a commercial this is back in the 90s, that there was a group, I can't even remember the name of them now, but they raised money to put ads on TV and put up some billboards to try to, that was, you know, geared toward making people understand the pro-life perspective. But one of those commercials I thought was just haunting. I couldn't watch it without getting emotional. And it was a woman sitting sort of in the semi-darkness on her bed, and the voice was saying, they said that there wouldn't be any voices. They said that, you know, just over and over, about that I was told that this wouldn't affect me for the rest of my life. And yet here I am trapped in this guilt that I feel because I took the life of my baby. And then it directed people to go to a website where they could sign up to be part of a group that would help them to deal with the fact that they've had an abortion. So I think this is the apex of Christianity. It's standing for the truth on both sides of this issue of the act of abortion. You stand for the truth to protect the life of that baby. But if the baby is sacrificed, then you stand for the truth of redemption and forgiveness and repentance and the life of the mother.
Yes.
I think those things are important. How did you get so passionate about life? Because that's not been true for you your whole life. You talk a little bit about that in there.
No, it wasn't. Wow. You know, when God calls you to something, I think he gives you a passion for it.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
This type of thing would have completely scared me to even think about being a social activist of any type years past. But he called me to it. That's the thing.
We need more social activists like you. I'm just telling you. I think part of the reason that the Christian witness is ineffective is because of the nature of the witness in too many cases. Jesus went to Nicodemus' house. Jesus, you know, had compassion on a woman caught in adultery. Jesus walked, as Max Lucado said, walked slowly through the crowd. I mean, his passion, compassion for people that were lost is all over the New Testament. And I think that needs to be our model, not anger, not all of the other stuff.
One of our listeners on Facebook has commented and said, was Jesus not present there in the abortion clinic? Was he so morally offended by the fact that was an abortion clinic, that he was not there with that baby at the moment that baby was passing into eternity?
And Graham Lotz talked about, you know, she was asked, where was God on 9/11?
Yeah.
And I loved her answer. She said he was running up the steps with the firefighters, mm-hmm. holding the hand of the dying, mm-hmm. comforting those who were, you know, that were calling out in the last moments of their life. I wish I was that smart, or maybe that spiritually sensitive. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're running out of time. What else do you want to talk about?
Well, I'd like to let everybody know about the website for the book.
Okay.
ConnectionAtTheFence.com. That's ConnectionAtTheFence.com. Excuse me. The title of the book is Connection at the Fence: The Unlikely Friendship Between an Abortion Worker and a Pro-Life Advocate. And also, we have a lot of educational material that we hand out, and it's all on our website at loveforyou.life.
Okay.
So Greenville for Life here is the umbrella organization that all the other sidewalk groups and different pro-life groups are under. So it's love, L-O-V-E, the number 4, and Y-O-U, loveforyou.life. The information we hand out on other options besides abortion, on natural family planning, on post-abortive care. I have a couple of brochures I've written on there as well, and one about my story. So I encourage people to go to loveforyou.life and also connectionatthefence.com to check out my book.
Do there need to be more people who are willing to be sidewalk counselors to step out, take that step?
We should have somebody there every hour during the day when that facility is open. Mm-hmm.
And you don't have enough people to do that yet?
No, but I think on top of that, I think every Christian should come out and spend an hour, 1 hour a year outside the clinic. We'd have that place just flooded with people.
Yeah.
To pray. Come pray. Join us.
Sheila, I really appreciate this. I'm going to have my wife hold me accountable to finish the book. But honestly, read half. The half I read is compelling. You'll enjoy it. And you'll enjoy it even more if you read the whole book. So I hope you'll do that. And I hope you'll get a copy and respond back to Sheila. You'd be glad to talk to people that are, I guess, wanting to email you or contact you.
Oh, yes. They can contact me through the website. And they can check out the reviews, too.
Okay.
I wish you'd tell us a story. Do you have a story just at the top of your mind? And I don't know what our time is like.
Got
one
minute.
Do you have
a quick story,
just one that really stands out in your mind of an interaction that you had as a sidewalk counselor?
The very first save was the most incredible, when several girls, minority girls, they stopped on the way in, said, "We're looking for the abortion clinic. I got to have an abortion." They went in, but I was telling them my story. And I was like, I was born not breathing. I was born dead, but I'm here now. She was like, what? You were born dead? It's like, yes, but I'm here now. Well, she looked like she didn't believe me. She ran on in, and then just a few minutes later, they came out and smiling and said, we changed our mind. I'm going to save the baby. I'm going to keep the baby.
Is
and
that right?
Their faces were transformed from darkness to light. It was incredible.
Yeah. You could
so
see that.
So incredible. And that has happened over and over and over, 37 times. I wish it was way more. I think people just don't stop and tell me on the way out.
Hmm. Sheila, thanks. It's been a pleasure to have you on. Let's do this again.
Okay.
We'll have you on again. We'll be back Monday, hopefully, if we can get here through the snowpocalypse.
Oh, don't worry. Tony's got a four-wheel drive. He'll make
it. That's right.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Talk, His Radio Network, or the Radio Training Network.